Or stay human.
Hi there, it's time for an hour of story and song on Stay Human. Today's show was first broadcast in September of 2024 with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I'm Michael Goldberg. So glad I made it here on time. I've been having some trouble getting out of bed because it's still dark outside when it ought to be morning. My dog and I both wake up around 5 o'clock every day, and she's accustomed to going for our first walk right away, or anyhow, after my first cup of coffee, in the pre-dawn light. Trouble is, now that we're rushing toward the fall equinox, she's waiting longer and longer every morning. "Come on," she says to me. "Don't you smell it out there? Don't you hear all those critters? What are we waiting for?" Me, I kind of want to wait until at least I can see my own feet. With sunrise now, not till 6:40, she's waiting more than an hour for me to be willing. Sometimes I even let her out at 5, then let her back in and go back to bed until morning actually comes. It's dawning on us, and on today's show, too, John Latimer celebrates the fall equinox, Rich McClear wakes up in the land of the rising sun, and I stay up all night with Homer, the poet, not the Simpson. Today's show is for all you early risers. Get on up with us.
Just to see a smile underneath the sky blue on this new morning, new morning, on this new morning with you. Can't you hear that motor turning? Yeah.
Our first storyteller today is Bemidji writer Marsh Muirhead.
Sunrise is the province of the baker, the farmer, and his rooster already at work. The early bird who gets the worm, ambitious people. It is signaled by the scent of frying bacon and brewing coffee, the fried egg that looks like the sun, the thud of the morning paper arriving on the porch, although those days are mostly in the past. Sunrise may announce the hangover, or in its welcome coolness, the breaking of a fever. In your tent in the Rocky Mountains, sunrise lets you know another night has passed without being eaten by the bear. Sunrise and sunset determine certain laws for hunters, drivers, pilots. I shot my first deer when I was 14, right at sunrise, the rule being you can shoot starting a half an hour before that. It was below zero that November morning, and I remember the big buck steaming in death in the snow, the risen sun in my watering eyes. I write best in the morning and began this essay a few days ago at sunrise. My writing desk faces east. The sun and its rise is a clock and a compass. Generations ago, people living in nature could tell you the time and date from the position of the sun as it peaked over the horizon. The earliest clocks, sundials, date from around 1500 BC, developed by Egyptian and Babylonian astronomers. If you live near the equator, the sun rises at 7:30 every morning, year-round, and sets at 8:30 in the evening. The extra hour of light is due to refraction, a story for another time. But the farther you get from the equator, the more variable the risings and settings, depending upon season and latitude. In Barrow, Alaska, the sun does not rise on November 19th and stays down until January 22nd, when it appears at 1:13 in the afternoon and sets again within the hour. On the other hand, at Barrow, it rises on May 11th and stays up until August 1st, when it sets at 2:25 in the morning, but pops up again 17 minutes later at 2:42. At 30,000 feet, a pilot flying east would see the sunrise 10 to 15 minutes earlier than people on the ground. And if he were in a car driving towards the big mountains in the west, their tops will be gloriously illuminated while all below is still in shadow. During the tumultuous years of the Civil Rights Movement in 1967, the black poet Langston Hughes wrote, "Quick, sunrise, come. Sunrise out of Africa, quick, come." And Horace Mann wrote this on sunrise. "Lost yesterday, somewhere between sunrise and sunset, two golden hours, each set with 60 diamond minutes. No reward is offered, for they are gone forever." Hemingway, speaking for the lost generation after World War I, took the title for his novel, The Sun Also Rises, from Ecclesiastes 1, 4, and 5. "A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises." At sunrise, the slate is clean, the gun goes off, the race begins again. Carpe diem, seize the day.
Thanks to Marsh Muirhead. Gotta hear Glenn Miller's Sunrise Serenade.
Thank you.
next on the early hours of the day, KAXE phenologist John Latimer.
There are some really remarkable things that happen early in the morning, and oftentimes I take those as a sort of a thank you for being up. And there are singular events. I remember sitting one morning with my good friend Matt Miltich in a duck blind, and duck hunters are always up before dawn, and you can hunt prior to the rising of the sun, but there is that special moment when you're sitting there and you'll see the sun sort of catch the tops of the trees, maybe across the lake from you, and you realize, wow, it's above the horizon now. One morning we were out and we had been sitting in the dark and listening to a great horned owl calling across the lake from us. And it was... It was comforting in a way, but at the same time, just a bit off-putting, like, ooh, owls. They're kind of... They have a sort of a reputation for showing up in bad times. They don't have a good press agent, apparently. But this owl was calling in the dark, and we were enjoying it as much as you can. And as it got lighter and lighter, the owl continued to call, and finally the sun began to illuminate the top of the tree. And about that time, the first crows took note of the owl, and they started to come in. And at first it was just a few, and they were talking, you know, while they were shouting insults. But it must be like one of those calling trees where the crows 500 yards away heard it and they called, and the crows 500 yards further out heard it and they called, and so on, because by the time Matt and I were sitting in sunlight, there were 100 crows and this lone great horned owl, and he was sitting in an oak tree that was more or less singular. He couldn't really conceal himself in the forest. He was in this nice big oak, but he was also surrounded by open land. And at some point, they were diving at him, how they do, you know, they make these sweeping dives and they try to scare him or get him to move. And finally, he broke from his cover and flew, and they just mobbed him. And it was all a remarkable bit of theater right in front of us. And I'm sure they didn't do anything lethal to the owl, but the owl would definitely pay them back, because I've walked through stands of trees before and found crow parts hung in the trees where an owl has stopped to visit and pay back those early morning disturbances. Some other things in the mornings, I appreciate the stillness of everything, and then sort of the beginning, and especially at the equinox, you know, the birds aren't calling now. In the springtime, it's when the equinox occurs in March, there might be a robin or two in the neighborhood, or a red-winged blackbird, maybe a killdeer, but very little else, and not a lot of calling going on by any means on the 21st of March. 21st of September, it's about the same. There's not much chatter. I hear the swans kind of trumpeting to one another on the lake. I hear the sandhill cranes sort of calling one another to breakfast. I hear the Canada geese, but little else. There isn't a lot of chatter among the birds. They're just sort of waking up and getting ready to come to the feeder. The squirrels and the chipmunks are all sleeping in, so just a really quiet time. Very peaceful. Good time to be out and take it in. I was out the other morning. I was hoping to get a look at the setting moon, and I'd gone out early and out into the field where I could see it. And I could hear coyotes far off. I could hear barred owls calling. Lots of chatter, lots of voices. But nobody was doing anything It wasn't wild and crazy. It was just really subdued, which is maybe how it should be in those early hours. I live on an east-west road, and when I come out the end of my driveway on the 21st, the sun is rising right up the middle of that road. Twice a year, it comes right straight up out of the road and into the sky, and that's always kind of a nice marker. And I think of ancient man and placing sticks in the ground and watching that progression, that movement. And there's even a device on the globe, and I don't know what it's called. It has a name. I should look it up. But it's a measure of the sun's angle, you know, where you are and how it relates to where the sun is and where you are and what kind of a shadow you'll cast. And so this time of year, it's kind of fun. Comes right up in the middle of the road and goes down right in the middle of the road. And then every day from now until about the 1st of January, there's a kind of a lag there. It'll start getting further south, further south, further south. And I'll watch and I'll see, you know, okay, now it's past that white pine. Oh, look, now it's down, clear down to that tamarack down there. Oh, you know what? It's not going any further. It's starting to come back. Oh, you do know where you are, yeah.
Thanks to John Latimer. Tune in for his weekly phenology report every Tuesday in the 7 o'clock hour on The Morning Show.
Sunrise, sunrise, looks like morning in your eyes, but the clock's held 9:15 for hours. Sunrise, sunrise, couldn't tempt us if it tried, 'cause the afternoon's already come and gone. And I said, who? You. Ooh, yeah.
Nora Jones on the Sunrise edition of Stay Human today. I've been tracking the adventures of my old friends Rich and Susie McClear. They traveled the world in the latter part of their careers, and they're still at it in retirement. They're currently on a cruise around the Pacific Ocean. When I saw that they had landed in the land of the rising sun, I just had to reach out to Rich late at night for him, early morning for me, in his cabin on the cruise ship.
Today, I made the decision not to go around Kyoto and see all the different temples, but just basically after riding on the train, which I love doing, and exploring the train station, which I love doing, we just went to one temple and just kind of, most people were kneeling on mats, but for old people that had chairs, I just sat there, feet flat on the floor, hand on each knee, just deep breathing and listening to the gongs, the slight smell of incense, the breeze from the, it's really hot outside, going through the pavilion and just, you know, half meditating, half praying, I guess. It was a good way to spend the day as opposed to running around looking at a lot of different temples and shrines and stuff.
I asked Rich if he had any sunrise stories he'd like to tell me.
I'm not a morning person at all. I spent a lot of mornings in radio studios. I've spent a lot of mornings not looking at the sunrise, but rather reading the weather or playing music. But I went back to this letter I wrote 29 years ago this month from Albania to my family, describing an event which tangentially involves mourning, I guess. But you can make your own decisions, be your own judge. The Stevens Center is a hangout for many Americans. It's a Christian coffee house near the main market in Tirana, Albania. Normally not the type of place you might look for me in, but consider this. It's clean. It's no smoking. That's really different in Albania. It serves good tasting food for not much money, including homemade ice cream. It has clean toilets. It serves ice made with sterile water. And it's close to our flat. Inside, there's a tense piece of the water hole. While I saw no lions and lambs lying together, I did see Mormon missionaries with white shirts, ties, and plastic name tags sit peaceably next to evangelical missionaries and Jesus t-shirts. University professors share the space with long-haired American teenagers who are dragged to Albania by mom and dad, and with shaved head American teenagers dragged to Albania by mom and dad. I wonder if this mission activity is aimed at Americans or Albanians. After all, Americans like clean ice. We live on Ruga Fidal Rada in the same flat as we lived 2 years ago. And the flat feels like home. It was nice to find things we added to the flat 2 years ago still there. Big coffee mugs, plastic trash cans with lids, and red vinyl chairs we bought right off the truck from Italy just before an evangelical pastor made off with the rest of them for his new storefront church. A new minaret rises to accompany our neighborhood evangelical church with its red vinyl chairs, and the Stevens Center is two blocks in the other direction. Living here stimulates the senses. A coffee roasting shop sits next door, and we wake to the smell of Turkish roast. It smells more like Ailey in the flat below, burning the toast while chasing one of her kids away from some greater mischief. The Muslim call to prayer slowly wafts across the quarter and mingles with the chirp of cicadas, and it adds a touch of the exotic. We went to the Stevens Center at 9 o'clock on Saturday evening for cappuccino. The place was full. The manager came over and asked what drew us to the place, and answered his own question. It must be the clientele. A quarter of them are radical missionaries cruising for souls, a quarter radical hippies cruising the Balkans, and then there's, and he nodded toward the corner, where eight bewildered-looking white-haired ladies sat, each with an Ola Sun Tours Albania tote bag. The manager said that while he was a missionary, he didn't go to the churches run by the missionaries who hang out at his cafe. When you get out of their place on Sunday, you know you've been to church, more Southern and Baptist, and I'm a West Coast kind of guy. We met a Mennonite missionary who confessed he was undercover researching his PhD dissertation, Evangelical Christian Missionaries and American Cultural Hegemony. my journalism students did a piece headlined Jesus Flett Englisch, or Jesus Speaks English. Just then, Billy Joe Daugherty, dressed in an Australian bush hat and a vest that said In Memory of Jesus on the front and 100% Saved on the back, came in distributing handbills with his, that is Billy Joe's, picture on them. His first stop was the Ola Sun Tours table. Unfortunately for him, the handbills were in Albanian, and the Sun Tours lady didn't speak Albanian. He went from table to table trying to get everyone to attend his crusade. He was met with confusion, indifference, and hostility. Not from the hippies, but from the other missionaries who viewed this newbie as competition. When he got to our table, he told us he was fresh from the triumph of saving souls in China. He assured me that he was not in competition with us, but wanted to sow the seeds that we would reap in our churches. He wanted Tirana to be just like home in Texas, with a different church on every corner. That's freedom. He obviously hasn't been in our neighborhood very long. We already have a different church or mosque on every corner. When we told Billy Joe that we were Fulbright professors and not sky pilots, he wanted to make sure we brought all our students to his crusade. As the 10 o'clock closing approached, folks floated out. Pastor from Tulsa stopped by our table on his way out and told me I looked familiar. He invited me to church. I know the church. It has red vinyl chairs. It's a real special this week, Christian clowns. Y'all be blessed now. It must be the clientele. Susie and I walked out to the market square. The last of the fruit vendors were sweeping debris to the beat of techno funk. We walked down Fidel Rada, knowing that our next encounter with faith would be 5 a.m. when we'd hear the call to prayer from the muezzin waft through our window with the aroma of Turkish roast. Well, that would have been a nice way to end the letter. Nice image, I think, but God has a sense of humor and he's getting back at me for being such a smartass with his missionaries. This morning, the new neighborhood mosque opened for business. At least the loudspeakers on its minaret opened for business. Instead of the romantic wafting of the morning call to prayer coming across six blocks and drifting in and out of our dreams, the call was more like Gabriel's blast. Allahu Akbar! Prayer is better than sleep. It is one thing for the central mosque to sound across government buildings and closed coffee bars at Skanderbeg Square at 5 a.m., disturbing only the sleep of security guards who should be awake anyway. It's quite another to have a mosque on your corner with distorted speakers at 5 a.m. I feel increased charity for the witnesses and the Mormons going door to door. At least they're at a decent hour. Or even for traveling crusaders from Tulsa or Texas going table to table.
To Rich McClear, I wish him calm seas and glorious sunrises. You're tuned to the radio station that he and Susie McClear founded back in 1976, KAXE, streaming worldwide at kaxe.org. For almost 50 years now, we're telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. The service is made possible by the generous contributions of our listeners. We usually think of the dawn as the beginning of something, but it's just as true that it can be the perfect end to a sleepless night. Up next, storyteller Denise Mayett.
8 years ago, I decided that the best way to bring my kid Ivan out to start college was to take Amtrak's Empire Builder train from St. Paul to Olympia, Washington, where they would be attending Evergreen College. I'm using their preferred pronouns in my story. We're both train enthusiasts, and I had always thought that a cross-country train trip would be a great way to travel, especially if we could manage to reserve a sleeper car. The day came in late September when Ivan and I arrived at the downtown St. Paul train station, loaded up with gear for their new life at Evergreen. We were delighted when a group of friends arrived at the station to see us off, and we boarded the train to their cheers and well wishes. It was late afternoon, and we settled into our sleeping car that was pitching back and forth a little more precariously than we would have liked. Ivan nervously said to me they hoped we would make it through the night. I didn't sleep much that first night and sat up watching the lights of the small Minnesota towns we were passing through while Ivan slept in the upper bunk. I started to feel a sense of dread creeping over me as the sleepless hours ticked by. Maybe it wasn't a good idea to be taking my kid to live across the country. What if it didn't work out? What if the train crashed? Finally, I drifted off to sleep and blearily opened my eyes to a faint light from under the window shade. I opened the shade to a marvel. The sun was rising over the prairie potholes of North Dakota, and in my sleep-deprived state, it was almost a hallucinogenically beautiful sight. I had never imagined this landscape, half water, half land, lit up with the colors of autumn and the oncoming sunrise. Birds were rising up from the shallow wetlands, and I felt my spirits also rise up at that moment. I knew we'd picked a perfect way for Ivan to transition to their new life in the Pacific Northwest. The rest of the trip was great, and Ivan ended up loving their new home. But that prairie sunrise is burned into my mind as the moment when I really believed this was the right decision.
Thanks to Denise Mayotte. Neville Brothers. It's the Sunrise edition of Stay Human, and I called Jennifer Donham because she's in charge of an annual event called Sunrise on the Mississippi. Jennifer is in Minneapolis, but she's quite familiar with KAXE because of her mother's longtime volunteer career here, Joan Donham. Jennifer told me the origin of the Sunrise on the Mississippi event.
In Minneapolis Parks Foundation, we are a small nonprofit that supports the work of the Minneapolis Park System. And we've only been around just about 20 years, but the parks have been around in Minneapolis for more than 140. You know, we live in a very philanthropic community, and, you know, Minnesota's wonderfully generous. Minnesotans are for their public radio, their community radio, and for their parks and public spaces. So we started this. It's a sort of a low-key gala without the big auction and all that. And it's also in the morning, trying to do something a little different and unique. And so 10 years ago, we started a breakfast under a tent on the river. And we've done different locations along the Mississippi in the city of Minneapolis. And we have quite a few locations available to us. We bring in a speaker, sometimes local, sometimes national, sometimes international, who has an inspirational and aspirational story to share about parks. This year was a woman named Akima Price. She's the founder of Friends of Anacostia Park in Washington, D.C. And that is along the river Anacostia in Washington, and works with parks as a place of healing and parks as a place to work through trauma, and works with communities, all different communities, and brings people together for health and wellness in green space and building community. It started in the morning downtown, mainly because we thought we could get a lot of people before they went into the office. Things are changing now with how people are working. So it's a little trickier. And then through COVID, we did different versions of, you know, hybrid or all online. But we've been able to do it every year. And the sunrise portion is just absolutely fantastic because you're along the water. You know, nothing's better than water. Everybody loves water. And the Mississippi has become, you know, and oh my gosh, KAXE is on the Mississippi there in Grand Rapids. So we're just a little few miles south of that for our breakfast. But we cater from, you know, a small restaurant in town. We sort of change it up every couple of years with different caterers. And it's a fundraiser. So we ask people to sponsor a table and bring their friends. And we ask people who are there to make a contribution. We've raised anywhere from $80,000 to $120,000, depending on, you know, how the winds are blowing. The speakers are obviously, you know, the main attraction. Well, I shouldn't say they're the main attraction. I think the river and the sunrise are the main attraction, and the parks are the main attraction. But they always come away being inspired and, you know, thankful for what we have here in parks. One year, there wasn't so much of a sunrise because it was a little rainy, but right in the middle of the breakfast, it started to rain on the tent, and it just had this lovely sound. And then a bald eagle, of course, flies by, you know, over the water, and everybody's oohing and aahing. And so these sunrises are, you know, they change every year, but it's always a wonderful way to get outside, appreciate the morning, appreciate parks, and have community. The parks are well-utilized, you know, 24/7, really. I have been a runner in the past and have headlamps that I use in the morning and I use at night, depending on the season. And I don't think I've ever been out there when there haven't been others getting their steps in and enjoying, you know, what's happening outside. This summer, with all the rain, we've been floating down the creek or on the Mississippi. We have this lovely Minnehaha Creek that goes from Lake Minnetonka to the Mississippi River and over the Minnehaha Falls. And you can float on that. And it's a highly technical because of all the foliage and, you know, trees that are down. So it's kind of an exciting lazy river, if you might, a natural lazy river we have right through the city. What do they say? Millions of visits to our parks every year, and not just from city residents. You know, we are a regional destination, the parks down here. It is a major selling point. They call it Minneapolis is a city in a park. And, you know, we have a lot of Fortune 500 companies in the metro area, and parks are used for them to recruit employees, right? To try to get people to come to this third coast here and the middle of nowhere. But when people get here, you know, it's sticky and they kind of like to stay. I was out on a lake in the city here watching the sunset and the moon rise because it was the full moon coming up. So we were, me and my girlfriends were sitting in the middle of a lake on our different flotation devices, enjoying a bug-free, quiet. Well, we were under, a few airplanes did go over, but it's okay. We're kind of used to that here. But a beautiful sunset and then the moonrise. We did not stay long enough to see the sunrise, though, Michael. We didn't quite make it that long.
Well, that's okay, Jennifer. There's always another day.
Excerpt from Ralph Vaughan Williams' Lark Ascending. Ooh, look, my mother said. You can see the trees. She was looking out the passenger side window in a car hurtling down the thruway, me half asleep in the back seat. We had set out well before dawn, but now, just a little, the light was seeping back into the world. Then she laughed at her own excitement. Of course you can see the trees, she said, as if she had known all along that the dark of night would end.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say, it's all right.
The day breaks, whether you're there for it or not. And every minute, somewhere, a new sky is dawning. I wonder, almost 8 billion of us waking every day, how many are seeing that day's sunrise, and how many the ways they see it. After a sleepless night, or eager to spring out of bed, for so many, just as a marker in another endless line of days, scratching to survive just to see one again.
Something happening here.
I was 16 and living in Chicago, a few blocks from Lake Michigan. My first few weeks in college, nobody to answer to, and revolution was in the air. We hadn't yet got tangled up in blue. Everything was possible.
Time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
And never before in the history of the world had there been young people like us, so brilliant, so bold, so ready to burst through all the claptrap and live original and beautiful lives.
War is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and get here today.
Oh. And never before had it been this particular moment in 1968. The students in the streets of Paris wrote on the walls, if you really know what's going on, you don't have to know what's going on to know what's going on.
What's going on?
Made perfect sense to me. Every day was day one. And the nights, the sexual charges with no ground wires in sight, the nonstop talk, the debates, the fantasies, the stories, the stereo albums, the bong, the bottles of wine passed around in their brown paper bags. Such nights were roving affairs. One dorm room, another, a blues club, another, someone's apartment, a 24-hour grocery, another long walk that might end at the lake where the night was ending as I sat on the rocks and looked east across Lake Michigan at the rosy pink fingers of dawn.
I'm not sleepy and there is no place I'm going to. Tambourine man, play a song for me. In a jingle jangle morning, I come following you.
There were classes too. At that time, the core curriculum included reading Herodotus and Thucydides, Sigmund Freud and Charles Darwin, Shakespeare and Homer. The Odyssey was a favorite of mine. One-eyed man-eating ogres, witches, nymphs, ghosts drinking blood, shipwrecks, and an epic battle at the end, the bad guys vanquished. I believe I identified more with blind old Homer than with Odysseus. I'd imagine him sitting on a stone wall by the sea, telling the story of this ultimate sea voyage, the whole thing committed to memory. So that for him, it wasn't like a work of literature so much as a set of fantastical events that he experienced and reimagined each time he recited them. These repeated phrases, the professor explained, are called mnemonics. That's how the bard keeps his place in the text. I know for sure Homer really liked those rosy pink fingers of dawn. He stuck them in everywhere he could. I would like to meet that boy man again, sitting on the rocks and telling himself stories. Encircled by the lake and the sky shifting through their dawn colors, his head full of Homer and Howlin' Wolf, the day breaking over him like a wave. If there was some way he could tell an old man how spectacular, how miraculous the sunrise, and I could tell him, thousands upon thousands of days later, that each time is brand new, every day is day one.
And how many times do you swear that you never love again? How many lonely sleepless nights? How many lies? How many fights? So why would you want to put yourself through all of that again? Love is pain, I hear you say. Love is a cruel and bitter way of paying you back for all the faith you ever had in your brain. Or could it be that what you need the most could leave you feeling just like a ghost? You never want to feel so sad and lost again. One day you could be looking through an old book in rainy weather. You see a picture of her smiling at you when you were still together. You could be walking down the street and who should you chance to meet but that same old smile you've been thinking of all day.
That's it for today's program. Thank you for facing eastward with us today on Stay Human, featuring Jennifer Downham, Denise Mayette, Rich McClear, John Latimer, and Marsh Muirhead. I'm Michael Goldberg. I'll be back this time next week with another mix of words and music. Stay human.
It could happen to you.